Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take to soften a hardening heart and open up a future? Juvenile offenders all too often find themselves headed for a literal life of crime, so interventions that can help them find and pursue another path are essential. One strategy has helped thousands of young people over the past two decades. In the Creative Solutions Program, adjudicated and at-risk youth are given a seven-week intensive course in the arts with classes in disciplines as diverse as spoken word poetry, improvisation, hip-hop, painting, and sculpture. The results can be measured in improved cooperation and communication skills, in better empathy and greater self-control, and in life outcomes that turn out better than the teens' early mistakes might have predicted. Joining us to talk about this are three people who are passionate about this program. Terry Smith is Executive Director of Juvenile Probation for Dallas County. Lisa Schmidt is an instructional specialist at Big Thought who works with young people in the Creative Solutions Program. And Allison Caldwell is a manager with the Creative Solutions Program. Welcome all of you to Think.
Thank you.
How did the idea for Creative Solutions arise?
Well, our executive director of Big Thought, Gigi Antoni, way back over 20 years ago, was in theater, and she saw a notice that said the juvenile department was looking for theater folks to come in and do improvisation classes actually in juvenile detention. She did this for several years. Later, she became the executive director of Big Thought, and we applied to the Jurors Fund. The Jurors Fund is that money, you know, when you go to jury duty and you can take the
You don't take your $6.
Right, right. Okay, so all of that money goes into the Jurors Fund, and at the time, that money was going to help the juvenile department. So we applied as Big Thought to provide these kinds of services to kids in detention. And we did this for 2 years. It was incredibly successful. We discovered, and the service officers who were in detention discovered, that the kids were much calmer. They were more introspective. And they seemed to find doing the arts very helpful to them in finding their way and their better path. So they came to us and said, can you do this out of detention? Can you do this with kids on probation? And that's really how the program began. So I started running the program in the summers. I also run after school. We still serve the kids who are in the detention centers. But our primary program is the seven-week program you spoke about.
I would imagine that working successfully with young people who have been in some trouble, first and foremost, requires thinking about them as more than the sum of whatever their rap sheet says. What does it take to do that, and why does the rest of society sometimes struggle with it?
I think the first thing, you make a great point. People do not see our kids as kids who need additional support. They'll look at their offenses and say, oh, how horrible they are, and they're judged by their offense. Now, don't get me wrong, some of our kids do commit egregious offenses. However, whatever we can do to help them make better decisions in the future so they can become law-abiding citizens, that's what our goals are. And luckily, Lisa is one of the perfect people to do that, because she deals with these youthful offenders who may have committed a heinous or egregious crime, or even a small, you know, shoplifting or something like that, and takes them and taps into their creative side, whether it's writing poetry, whether it's staging, arts, the drawing, no matter what that is, and takes them to a level of success that they haven't experienced previously.
And I think that a lot of different things happen when people think about juvenile offenders. It's typical to either avoid them, to label them, but we look at them and say, what is possible for them and how can we cultivate them and their talents?
It sounds like it's also you're trying to help them find a new way to define themselves.
And you have to. Our kids that are in our juvenile system have made horrible choices. And so we don't make excuses for them. But what we try to do is get them to think what their actions cause and who they harm. You know, victim restoration, we got to get that empathy piece in there. And being part of this program helps them to develop empathy so they are aware that there's causation to their actions. And that's what we have to do. Kids, by nature, make horrible decisions. That's the testimony of youth. You know, we kids just don't make good decisions. So if we can get those kids to make better decisions, to learn empathy, to learn how to work together, and to learn how to communicate. Some of our kids just don't have that basic wherewithal to talk about what they're feeling. So they're able to put it in writing. They're able to put it in acting. They're able to put it in creating. And that helps give them a voice that they didn't feel they had previously.
How are participants selected for the program?
Generally, the probation officers. We have an outstanding pool of probation officers who have worked diligently with Create a Solution over the summer. And so it's generally a probation officer recommendation. Now that we're getting ready to go into Lee Todd, our newest girls facility, it will just be the girls that are in that facility. So those who have an interest in just working with them in general. But for the 7-week program, it's generally a referral from the probation officer.
I'm curious about the energy and the attitudes on like day one and day 35, because, you know, any group of teenagers is going to be too cool for school in the beginning. Can you all talk about what you see over the course of that time?
The first day of Creative Solutions is my favorite day of the year. And I tell the kids that. They're terrified because it's all the kids that got kicked out of school. They're all together in one room. And so everybody's very wary of one another, and they still have on all of their regular protective, you know,
posturing.
Their posture, the angry faces. And so all of that is still in place. It takes us about 4 days to get that to drop away. But it only takes 4 days. By the end of the program, they are different, and you can really see it. In 2004, we won the Coming Up Taller Award from the President's Committee on Arts and Humanities, and the reason it's called the Coming Up Taller Award is because when the kids bow, they are one size, and when they come up from the bow, they are actually taller. You can see a lightness and a brightness to them. They feel their own potential. They feel respected and they feel heard by that audience. It's really amazing. It's a totally different group of kids.
How does it work? I guess they're exposed to all these different forms, and then are they allowed to sort of choose, like, I really love hip hop, I really want to do painting, that sort
right.
of thing?
So in the beginning, all the kids will come in and they'll choose either they're going to be in the performing arts or they're going to be in the visual arts, sort of depending on whether or not they're a, you know, kind of loud, outspoken, jokestery kind of kid or if they're very introspective. So we let them choose that at first. And then they can always switch within the first week. But generally what we're doing, if they're in choose the performing arts, they're going to test out whether or not they like to sing, whether they prefer to dance, whether they prefer to write, and then they'll specialize. For the first couple of weeks, we're actually creating the musical play, the original musical play, which is based on their histories and what they want to tell the audience. And then the second half of the program is a very rigorous rehearsal process that you would experience in the professional theater. To me, the most interesting part, of course, is hearing their stories and having them create that play and that music. It's the very often the first time that anyone's ever asked them to express their own opinions, their own thoughts, share their ideas and perspective about the community. And so we say to them, okay, so we're going to have, you know, Dr. Smith in the audience. We're going to have judges and policemen and your parents and your grandparents and your minister and the kids from your gang. What do you want to tell them? What do you want to communicate? And then they have to decide, what is that message they want to communicate? It's really pretty amazing and pretty powerful.
And I have to agree with Lisa, because I've gone to, since I've been with Dallas County, I've always gone to their performances at the end of their summer. And just to see these kids tell their stories, some of the stories they tell are cringeworthy. They're things that I never think of, but it's very real things that they have to deal with. The flip side to that, too, is when you see that light that has been turned on instead of that dullness, they seem to have you know, when they begin the program, and then they get standing ovations. And then when they show their art, their talk, it's just the light that goes on behind their eyes that they get it, that they've got it, that they were able to tell their stories where someone was able to hear them. They're gut-wrenching stories, things that you don't even think about that these kids go through. And they're survivors. You know, in the book Portrait of Potential that Creative Solutions and Big Thought just published, if you read some of their little poems that they put together, it's like, oh my gosh, how impacting. What have these kids gone through? But they're still standing. It's amazing.
And I think one of the main tenets of this program is helping the kids be with what is and what has happened and discover what else is possible, and working with that, with them, is what we're focusing on and reinforcing the entire summer.
Am I correct about this? It sounds like not unlike a summer camp that very privileged kids might, you know, spend thousands of dollars to attend, but it's treated like a job. Can you explain the thinking behind that and how that manifests itself?
Sure. The reason that I created it to be like a job was because these kids pretty much don't like school and schools let them down. Hmm. So why make it seem like school, right? So the first thing is all of the instructors are called, they're you know, master teaching artists. So we're called master artists. And the kids are called our employees. They're our contractors. And they actually receive a stipend, a whopping $200 at the end of the program if they make it through to the end of the program. So we said, look, you don't come to work, you don't get paid. So we frame the entire thing like a job. We teach basic job skills along with the art. So things like punctuality, call your boss if you're not going to show up, how to shake hands and look somebody in the eye, how to ask questions if you don't understand what's going on. Those really basic things that most kids understand, our kids don't know coming in, but will help them in the long run. We talk to them about, you've got to be the one who dresses appropriately. You know, so simple things like that we have going along. And their job is making art. Their job is to make a musical play and work together, and their job is to get an exhibit mounted no matter what.
I think what people, initially your question was, why care about these kids? We look at them, you know, one-dimensional. I think what always bears fruit is the results that we get from these kids, not just the light that comes on, but the data that supports that these kids do not come back into the system. These kids go on to college. These kids go on to jobs. And there's several studies that are out there that shows how the arts impacts kids and their decisions. So keeping them involved, it goes beyond just giving them a camp for 7 weeks. It will allow them to change their future, to change their lives. They do better in school. They go to college. They become productive. So it's not just anecdotal stories we have. It is research-based data that we can actually show that these kids actually do better.
We're speaking this hour with Terry Smith, who is Executive Director of Juvenile Probation for Dallas County, with Allison Caldwell and Lisa Schmidt, both with Big Thoughts Creative Solutions Program. We'll resume the conversation in a couple of minutes. You can join it by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering the SMU Certificate Program, where you can learn to draw and paint, how to speak French, or plan for your retirement. Courses start each week through spring. Registration and information is at smu.edu/CPFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about Big Thought's Creative Solutions Program, which offers intensive arts engagement training to adjudicated and at-risk youth. My guests are two people from Creative Solutions at Big Thought, Lisa Schmidt and Allison Caldwell. Terry Smith is here as well. She's Executive Director of Juvenile Probation for Dallas County. You can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. I'm curious about what you all hear in breaks when everybody, you know, takes a second and goes to get a snack and you hear these young people talking to one another about what they're experiencing.
Allison's always there at break.
Yeah. I think it's really important to actually sit with them during breaks and involve myself as much as possible in kind of the sharing of snacks. So I'll oftentimes bring a snack of my own or sit down with a coffee or something and actually try and kind of in more of a relaxed, informal situation when we're not, you know, trying to actually create original work and build the play or the gallery exhibition, to really just talk and hear about what's going on in their personal lives. I was amazed my first summer about how much they would share with me. And maybe it's because I look extremely young, and I am young, but, you know.
You should tell them about Henry.
Yeah. There was a young man my very first summer who was from Honduras. He was left with his grandparents in Honduras by his mother when he was about 2 years old, and so he was raised by them. They tragically died in an accident, and he was kind of left on his own. He was kind of taken in by a local gang, used to run drugs for them and do all sorts of things as a young child, and then he was placed with a very difficult decision at one point to actually murder somebody else, and he chose to flee. And he, as a child, as a 13-year-old boy, made it to the United States, made it to Dallas, and actually ended up finding his mother. He knew she was in Dallas, so it was an incredible story. And he actually shared the bulk of this with me during snack time.
Wow.
So he was very uncomfortable speaking English openly. He was embarrassed about his accent. And so I speak some Spanish. And when I was reading through his journals, I discovered he had the most beautiful, beautiful poetry. This kid was an amazing writer. But he would never share his work because he didn't want to speak. So the big summer goal was, how do we get Henry on stage? We've got to get Henry on stage. This is a really important story that so many people need to hear. And so we ended up coaching him one-on-one just for hours. So that was primarily me. And then, you know, during the show, we ended up projecting the translation of his piece on this large mood, which was a piece of our set. And every performance, I literally had to stand backstage and push him on because he was so nervous. But when he was sharing his piece, the quiet in the audience, I mean, you could hear a pin drop. Everybody was hanging on every word, and it was a different language, but it didn't matter. And I think that, those moments where you can kind of just listen to the kids' stories, they end up shaping the whole play and the work that they produce. So, yeah, snack time is a very valuable time for us.
What's Henry doing now? Do you know?
I've actually I haven't heard from Henry in a little while. I hope that he's doing well. It's been a few years.
I think one of the hardest parts is that we lose track of the kids.
Yeah.
The kids that keep – and there are a lot of kids that keep in touch with us, but, I mean, thousands, it's a lot of kids don't.
Yeah.
It could be that, you know, they got what they needed from us and they moved on. I mean, I don't know how many times you call your high school teacher to thank her for all the things that you learned.
And you think about them every day, too,
yeah,
don't you?
But you do. But yeah. How often are you calling to thank them? Well, I think that, you know, a lot of kids move on. Our students are very, mobile.
Yeah.
In fact, 30 days after the end of the program, 30% of our kids, their telephones have been disconnected. Another 60 days after that, they're no longer in their homes. Another 30% are no longer – their mail gets all returned to me. So this is a population that's constantly moving and very difficult to track.
And then on the flip side, we do invite returning youth back to our program. If they've completed one summer, they can come back until they've turned 19. So we do have – regardless of whether or not they're on probation anymore, we do have kids that have been with the program since they've been since they were 13 years old, and now, you know, they're 18 years old, and they play a huge role in the buy-in that first week. They've been with the program. They've bought in. They already think it's amazing and so cool. So they always come back to us, and they really help us kind of engage the new kids.
Now, they serve as mentors
for the
younger kids coming
really
in.
It's empowering for them,
and it's,
too.
You know, mm-hmm. It's so much more important to have a teenager tell you it's cool than an old lady.
We have an email here from Casey in Dallas who asks, what are these youth lives like outside the program? Where do they come from? And do they receive something from this program they aren't receiving anywhere else?
I would say yes. The majority of our kids, of course, the common denominators, they're all on juvenile probation. They're all deemed at risk. They're all from Dallas County. Generally, they, you know, the arts have been taken out of the schools, with a few and far exception of certain schools like Booker T. Washington. Most of the schools no longer have an arts program.
They've got sports, though.
Yeah, that's true. I think sports is great, but it's for a limited few. The arts can impact so many more. So what they're not getting is that level, and it's not all of our kids, because some kids can do sports. So these are for the kids who may not be athletic. They may be a little bit more withdrawn, like Henry is, a little bit more self-conscious. They may not have had a lot of successes in life. They're probably not on the debate team, the French team, or if they even have those teams anymore in school. I'm dating myself. But the common factor is they didn't have access to what Creative Solutions has been able to give them, that sense of telling their story, of being heard. You know, just someone who's there like Allison or Lisa, who has a phenomenal relationship with these kids, that before there was no one there. You know, there wasn't a teacher there. There wasn't a parent there or a guardian. So it's an outlet. I appreciate the callers or the email, because our kids who are doing well in Creative Solutions don't have that outlet at home.
What you talked about with the break, like what do they talk about at break? So part of our philosophy with Creative Solutions is that I train the teaching artists. So the first thing you're going to do is you're going to shake everybody's hand. That's really important to have that human touch. We're going to look everybody in the eye, and we're going to – each of our staff is going to get to really know a certain number of kids, so that every kid has an adult that they're connected to by the end of that program. If they did that in schools, if they made sure every adult had some connection to every kid there, that would be huge. The Search Institute has been around for many, many years, and they've come up with a theory called SPARK. And the idea behind SPARK, if you know it, is that every person, you, all of us, and young people have that thing that wakes them up, that makes them alive, that when you are doing your SPARK, time flies because you love it. You can't wait to do it. One of our goals with Creative Solution is to identify that spark in that young person, get them to articulate it, and then we talk about it. So when they did, the Search Institute did a study to find out teenager sparks. Surprisingly, they found out that more kids have a spark in the arts than they do in sports. However, schools spend a lot more money on sports than they do in the arts. Sort of backwards, isn't it? So what we're doing is we're finding those kids for whom that creative outlet is their spark, and we're putting them with professionals for whom that's their spark. And when you get that kind of energy together, the kids can really blossom and grow and begin to express themselves.
How did they encourage one another? You know, are they pretty receptive, and are they open enough once the program, you know, gains some steam to say, I can't believe you painted that. That's amazing. Or, my God, what a great poem. Or
okay,
whatever.
Well, now Allison has to tell Catalina's story.
The storyteller. Go for it, Allison.
I always, when I think about kind of the kids really connecting and encouraging one another and working collaboratively together, I always think back to this was summer 2013. The beginning of the program, we had two big guys. They were in rival gangs and different races. They wanted to fight each other the first week. We did a what we call verbal de-escalation, and there was no fight. But there was just some...
You talked them down.
Yes.
Right.
Otherwise, yes, talk them down.
There was some just kind of immediate tension based on where they were coming from. Mm-hmm. And we have this young woman who's been with us for 2 years. She's in the process of transitioning from being a young man to a young woman. And we were kind of... concerned about how the kids might treat her, what they might say to her.
There's a lot of homophobia, transphobia, and so we were really concerned.
So by the end of at the beginning of the program, these three young people wanted really nothing to do with each other. And then throughout the course of the summer, they realized that these three were probably the three most passionate and talented musicians in the program. They shared that in common. So they ended up writing multiple songs together. Two of our boys were the rappers, and Catalina, the young woman, did all of the singing, and she has a fantastic, beautiful voice. And by the end of it, the boys were referring to each other as brothers, and the three of them, the day after the program, actually went out shopping together, spending their stipend. They are now hanging out. So
wow.
I think that kind of story highlights how the kids really do support one another, and they really can come together even though they may come from very different places.
So many of them may still be on probation, but there's that sort of returning to one's regularly scheduled environment. And I wonder about the risks of that, and no matter how great, you know, you feel, it's like people who go on vacation and they think, I'm going to stay this relaxed for the rest of the year, and you get back to your same situation. Are there things that you are doing in preparation for that return to conditions that aren't as idyllic and maybe not as receptive to these kinds of relationships?
Well, sure. We have a curriculum that we're doing with the kids that focuses on, like Allison said, accepting what is. Mm-hmm. And then building up their personal resilience. And it starts with self-awareness. They have to understand themselves, what they're thinking, what they believe is the truth, and beginning to clarify that, getting rid of some kind of crazy thinking errors they might have. And then they have to begin to rely on themselves if they mm-hmm. can't rely upon their families for that kind of support, and seek out other healthy, emotionally mature people as their support group. And so what we see in our testing is that at the beginning of the summer, they're testing very low on their empathy skills, let's say, for example.
Excuse me for interrupting you. Do you think that's a defense mechanism? Like, you can't really worry about what anybody's thinking about if you're hurting too badly?
Yeah. Absolutely. And also, they're not seeing it modeled anywhere.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So they're testing very low.
58% actually are testing below average on a SSAS, which is a social emotional assessment by Pearson.
And then at the end, they're testing quite high. But in another, you know, we test again in 60 days, and it's dropped. Now, it isn't to where it was, but it has dropped some, and we have to expect that because they are returned to their, like you say, their regular environment, you know, where they're fighting against, you know, what led them to the problem in the first place. But I do believe that it sticks. You know, they're not going back to where they were. It sticks, and they are on a trajectory to keep growing.
One of the things, and I appreciate you bringing that up, Lisa, one of the things that we all need to keep in mind is whether you're in a gang, a football team, a chess club, a debate club, those are considered gangs, but positive versus negative. And so, you know, I'm have some psychology background, and so the issue always is social bonding. What do kids attach themselves to? And once they attach themselves to create a solution, that art world, it expands them so they don't have to rely on those gangs that they previously have, whether it was a positive or negative. I'm using gangs generically, not specifically, because we don't want to label a football team as a gang, but it's the social bonding that a child gets. And so they look for outlets to match what they learned throughout the summer as opposed to the negative outlet that they had. So if we can change their bonding experience and giving them that attachment to something beyond what they experienced, and they know it may not be from their family.
And so I really appreciate that you said that. We actually, we recently brought in a gang expert, Anthony Goulet, to train our staff. And one of the things that really stuck with me that he said that I've been thinking about a lot is that every person, young people, adults, everybody has the need to be seen, heard, believed, and loved. And if those needs aren't being met, they're going to meet them whatever way they can. And sometimes that's joining a gang. Sometimes that's joining a football team. And we also try and provide this healthy contrast, a positive contrast, another option to meet those needs. And throughout the program, we're not with them long enough for them to become dependent on us for the rest of their lives. What our goal is for our kids to become aware of what they have already inside of themselves so that they can make good choices in the future without us being there.
It increases their self-esteem.
Yeah.
And I think people make better decisions when they have some more intrinsic internal self-worth. And that's what this is all about with everything that we do with our kids that are involved in our system, is to get them to have more internal self-controls to increase their self-esteem so they won't make bad decisions. Creative Solutions is able to do that in 7 weeks, what sometimes takes us a lot longer with some other programs, because that's daily. It's day in, day out. And then, you know, kids are... they need immediate gratification. So at the end of 7 weeks, they have a product, they have a play, they have pictures, they have portraits, they have everything so they can see it.
We're speaking about Big Thoughts Creative Solutions Program with Terry Smith of Dallas County Juvenile Probation, Lisa Schmidt, and Allison Caldwell of Big Thought. We'll be back to the conversation in 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering the SMU Certificate Program, where you can learn to draw and paint, how to speak French, or plan for your retirement. Courses start each week through spring. Registration and information is at smu.edu/CPFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour about Big Thought's Creative Solutions Program, which offers intensive arts engagement to adjudicated and at-risk youth. We have Lisa Schmidt and Allison Caldwell here from Creative Solutions, and Terry Smith as well. She's Executive Director of Juvenile Probation for Dallas County. Our number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. Terry, I want to talk a little bit more about juvenile probation, because these are officers who are doing this work, but they're really like caseworkers, right? I mean, they have to really get to know the young people they work with. Can you talk a little bit about that process? And I'm guessing there's never quite enough time and resources to do everything that people might wish to do.
Well, they're a little bit of everything. So, you know, they have to be a teacher, a mentor, a caseworker, a social worker, as well as a probation officer, making sure they uphold the laws of the court had put on them. So part of their job is first and foremost to make sure they follow their court stipulations. They keep the community safe, so they make sure the kids are doing what they're supposed to do, so we keep the community safe. But without their input and working with these kids, they have to know the kids, because they'll know which kids need more. Like, this kid goes here because he's creative, or this kid goes here because he needs this. And so the probation officer has to be fairly astute to every child individually to be able to refer them to creative solutions and know this is a good fit for this particular kid. So if you can imagine our probation officers, we have an outstanding group of probation officers who work with the kids when they're placed at home. They've got to be able to like a juggler. They've got to be able to juggle so many things with all of the kids that are on their caseload. And so for them to have the option to put them with creative solutions, we're so glad to have that, you know, public-private partnership that seems to work so well for our kids. So that's just one piece of the puzzle that they can use to help this child, and it's worked very well for them. So they're really the impetus for, because they know the kids better.
We work really closely with the probation officers. I always tell people probation officers are my favorite people.
They're amazing.
They are amazing. We are always deferential to the probation officers. We encourage them to drop by at any time. We want the kids to see us deferring to the probation officers. We want the kids to see us being very close partners with them so that they can see that there is a united front of adults who all care about them and are looking out for their interest. Often the parents may be very difficult to get in touch with, and so we can go through those probation officers to make sure that that child is getting everything that he or she needs, because they're looking out for you know, to make sure they're still at home, they're being taken care of with food, you know, the shelter, the regular things that they need.
And we work with probation officers that will go to the end of the earth for their kids. We have probation officers from the district in Garland that will ride public transportation over an hour both ways to show their kids how to use the buses to get to SMU each summer. We have probation officers that come multiple times a week to check up on the kids at SMU at the program that are constantly in communication with us. We make calls daily to many of the probation officers. It's
really
important.
And one of the reasons the partnership works is because we write a behavioral log on every kid every day, and that's sent to the PO. So they know exactly what the kid is doing every single day. So it's really tight.
It's like we're mom and dad. We're between the probation department and Creative Solutions, because you have to communicate on what's best for that child. So it's a perfect partnership. And Allison makes a great point. Our probation officers go above and beyond the call of duty to do what's right for this kid. Our motto at our juvenile department is putting youth first. And that's always what the challenge is. You've got to put youth first, even though it means you may have a 10-hour day, even though it means that you've got to ride a bus to take a kid, show them how to utilize the bus. It's just a great partnership to have, that we're all invested in what's best for this particular child. And then the flip side of that is the kid sees and feels that, you know, that everybody is invested in his success, not invested in his failures or his mistakes. Going forward, what does that look like? So they're, now the kids are able to see, you know, a future that they may not have seen before, because you've got people who are invested to with his success.
Terry, you mentioned that you like to go every year and sort of look at the showcase of work that students have done. Are your eyes ever on your probation officers to see what their faces are doing as they're watching?
You know, I've talked to them. I've seen them cry, because it's like a proud parent. And, you know, I made the mom and pop reference as a euphemism. However, it's very applicable, because our probation officers are more than officers of the court. They are mentors. They are role models. They take their job seriously. They are the proud parents. Sometimes they're the only cheerleaders these kids have. And so for them, it's beyond a job. For them, it's an investment in the youth. And you can see it. They're just, they're like, Dr. Smith, come over here. Look what my child did. And they're pulling me in directions to show off the artwork that their kids have done. So they are just as proud as the kids are of themselves, too.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have David on the line in Dallas. Hi, David.
Hello, Chris. I called today to attest to the long-term success of programs like this. In 1994, 21 years ago, I coordinated a program very similar to this for DISD at the Learning Alternative Center for Expelled Youth, in which we worked with adjudicated violent juvenile offenders. Had them write a play about their lives perform monologues in front of audiences, and had tremendous success with the program. Those young people are now in their 30s, have gone on to really successful lives. One of them is a playwright who's had 6 plays produced. Another manages a real estate portfolio for a bank. And to this day, 21 years later, I still hear from a lot of those young people. And they're having great success in their lives, and many of them attribute it to that program. So I want to thank your guests for the work they do, and let them know that in our program, over 20 years later, we know those kids are still successful because of that program.
Thanks so much for your call, David.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Are there things that have been tried over the years that worked better than others? And I'm curious about how the program has evolved.
Oh, yeah.
Artists like to experiment.
Oh, yes. Well, we didn't really know what we were doing 20 years ago. I mean, we jumped into it. I would say that being very purposeful about the social-emotional learning aspect, bringing on Allison and building that specific curriculum, we now have not just the professional artist, but we also have what we called a life skills coach that is with us at all times to work with the kids. I discovered that that was just as important as the training of the art. I think originally I thought that I wanted that if the artistic end product was of high quality, it would raise the self-esteem of the kids, and that was enough. And I quickly realized that that was not important, but was important their process and their opinions about what it is that they created and what they do, and that there has to be a balance between the aesthetics and the learning. So we've learned a lot, and we've changed. We also have now a crew of teaching artists that have been with us close to 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so the longer these teaching artists are with us, the better the program gets, because they're learning and they're growing on their own experience. They love coming back, which is great. I think they love coming back because it feeds them too. They feel that they can... they're not only contributing as professional artists to the city of Dallas, but this work feeds their souls, and they really feel that they can use their art to make a very immediate change in another person. And so we have just an unbelievable staff that keep coming back year after year.
Allison, earlier you mentioned the verbal de-escalation. I wonder how discipline is handled within the program and how often it comes up.
We are in our training process, which is very extensive as a staff member. We're all trained in physical restraint, which is a requirement, but we never have to use it. We never once have had to use it, because we're also heavily trained in verbal de-escalation. We use a mediation process that professional mediators in the courts have used, and we train on that, and then we use we actually practice verbal de-escalation with each other in the training. It's a process of calming the kids down enough when they do lose control of their emotions, so that physical violence doesn't happen, and it actually works very well. Another thing that we do in our program is with this life skills component that Lisa was talking about. We very explicitly and intentionally teach our kids about their growing brains and what's happening in their brains, what's going on in their brains when they are losing control of their emotions. And we do this to both normalize it, because what's going on for them is something that's going on for every teenager. And we also do this so that we can actually teach them some self-soothing techniques, some breathing, some exercises that they can actually use to begin to self-regulate. One of our fun sayings that we have that we repeat with them daily is, don't just do something, stand there, which means when you're losing control of your emotions, whether it's anger or sadness, overwhelmed, whatever it is, take a step back. Breathe, calm down your amygdala so that you can make a really good decision, because we all know you can't make your best decisions when you're all fired up.
And in 20 years, we've never had a student attack a staff person, ever. And when I tell this to other people who run programs of this type, they're shocked. But we never have, and it's because of the training that the artists go through, and I think it's because they're artists. These are people who are in touch with their own emotions, and so... We keep a cool head, And we never give the students any reason to want to attack any other staff person. We have no issue with that whatsoever.
And part of that is labeling so the child knows what they're going through. You know, the kids who tend to do well and don't commit crime are able to understand choices, able to understand how they're feeling internally and externally, and verbalize that. So when you give the kids who come to Creative Solution, one, a name that you're allowed to be angry, but it's how you express it and to work with that. And so it's the whole thing about understanding what you're feeling, looking at your triggers, what will send you off, who's pushing your buttons, and how do you deal with that? Because they may not have had this at home, and they stay in a perpetual state of chaos at home. And so this helps them control their chaos, because before they felt helpless, hopeless, that they couldn't control their home environment. If we give you the tools to say, yes, you don't have to feed into that. You know, you don't have to feed into this. You can control yourself. And so I think they're so appropriately allowing our kids to put a voice and a name to what they're going through, and to let them know they're not alone and they're not unique. Everybody goes through this. So it's outstanding that they can do that.
It's come up a few times already that sometimes parental figures are there and sometimes they're not. That has to be hard to see when the showcase period comes along.
It's absolutely heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking because you see these great big boys, you know, they're 6'2", and they're these great big guys, and they're spending most of their time backstage scanning the audience to see if their mama came to watch them. And there's no mama out there, and I'm furiously on the phone and trying to send a cab to their mom's house and begging them to get in the car. It's heartbreaking, and that's why those POs are so important. So I'll say, hey, you know, your mom didn't come, but your PO's out there right now, and there's plenty of people that care about you.
And on the flip side, we do have we work with some amazing families who show up, and they, you know, they
bring like 20 people
show up with
they bring
whole
the whole
entourage,
church.
Yeah. And you know, we have family engagement nights that we host at SMU during the middle of the summer, and they'll show up for those. They're on the phone checking in with me or Lisa. How's my kid doing? What are they up to? So, I mean, it's a wide range of parental support.
The involvement is the gamut. You can go from extremely involved parents to parents who are absent. But no matter if they're over-involved or under-involved, what we still have to work with is the kids on how to deal with it, regardless of what their individual circumstances are. So it's yeah, their stories will break your heart, but what we try to tell them is and what?
And so, here's what happens.
Yes. Now you've got to look beyond your circumstances.
Terry Smith is Executive Director of Juvenile Probation for Dallas County. Allison Caldwell is Manager of Creative Solutions. Lisa Schmidt is an Instructional Specialist at Creative Solutions. You can learn more about the program at bigthought.org. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer with help on the phones today from Kristen Taylor. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think, and you can email the show at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.